This is Richard Epcar, voice of Bato and Ghost in the Shell, and you're listening to Nutty Bites.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Joss, and today we're going to be talking about unconventional heroes. And with me today, I have some regular guests.
I mean, at this point, we should just be family, right?
Well, you are family. This is true. Guests on the show, family.
This is Jen.
Hi, I'm Tech. I mean, Jason.
Yes, there is no Tech here. You don't get to steal his line.
By the way, funny thing, on Nostalgia Pilots, we were talking about it, that everybody's just going to start doing that to take Tech's intro until he rages and kills us all.
I think that's a great plan. I really do. So Face, by the way, says I need to start leaving swearing in the podcast. Yes, I know. But then 13-year-olds couldn't listen. So we're going to be talking about unconventional heroes. And what we mean by that is, so we all, when you think of like a comic book hero, you picture Superman, Power Girl, you picture the boobs and butt pose, you picture the insanity of it all.
The Aryan bloodline.
Yes, which is really funny considering where Superman came from. Faye says, wow, Tech changed a lot.
We're still brown. It's fine.
So, so we're going to be talking about unconventional heroes, heroes that defy character types, that are unconventional in their behaviors, but also in maybe how they look. So I'm going to start this off with a favorite of mine. So you said you did some research. Did you do research on my girl Faith?
No, I did not get Faith, but I did get Kamala Khan. I did get Etta Candy.
okay, so let's start with Faith. Let's start with Faith. So Faith is from Vagrant Comics, which is a smaller imprint, but big enough that you will find them in comic book stores. She is amazing. She is a fat superhero that is unapologetic. And it is never she's a superhero, but she can still do things and be fat. No, it's never a question. It's never anything. Her secret identity, which I love, is basically she writes listicles for an online magazine. Give a BuzzFeed. and she reports on, and she's a super geek. Like, she makes Buffy references left and right and all sorts of really fun things. But there's like this whole backstory of her and some other superheroes, and like a big subplot is her thinking about her ex, who is exactly the conventional blonde-haired, blue-eyed superhero.
Square jaw.
Yeah. Perfect abs. Everything. And it's great because she's out there. She's awesome. Her costume, it is very modest also. It's like a long sleeve jacket that splits down the center and pants and sneakers, which is completely practical. And some people have made comments about, oh, well, is it not a revealing costume because she's fat? And it's like, no, it's not a revealing costume because it's comfortable. I'm a martial artist. I don't want to practice with my belly exposed and my arms exposed, even though I might want to go to the beach that way. That's not how I want to fight. So I totally get a cotton costume that covers everything. And yeah, there was even an issue that they dedicated to this, to the idea of redesigning her iconic costume. And there are all sorts of variants, including a Sailor Moon inspired one, which was fantastic. And they got to draw every single one. And in the end, she's like, nah, I like mine, because she points out all the reasons why those would give her problems in fighting. So Faith is awesome. She is cheery. She is grounded. She has to deal with consequences of being a superhero. I will say, when her secret identity gets out to some people at work, it becomes awesome, because it shows that her secret, the only like downside is her secret identity is so oppressive for her that she can't actually just be the awesome person that she is. So when people start to know who she is, then she gets to really just be herself, going into that whole thing, like with Bruce Wayne, that Bruce Wayne is the mask and that Batman is the real identity. It's very similar.
That, and I think that inversion is actually a better way to do things, because one of the reasons why I'm not a Superman fan is because he's such a Boy Scout, right? Like, and his persona, Clark Kent, is still just a Boy Scout, except they've like, oh, you're a sniveling nerd who has no gumption and you're put upon, right? Like, that sucks, right? And so this isn't a hero, but an actual villain. I would like to talk about Miranda Waller.
Yeah.
Miranda Waller is the woman behind the Suicide Squad, and she's behind imprisoning all the supervillains from the DC universe. And if you don't know, Miranda Waller is a large, plus-size, strong, angry black woman. Like, holy living God. Like, Miranda Waller's a BAMF, okay? Like
except in the movie, she's not bad. But she's still awesome.
Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong, I like the actress who played her because she's fantastic. But she's in the movie, she's been very much watered down. Like, but in the comic, she's like, I just shot you in the face, deal with it type character. And it's awesome. And one of the things I've noticed about a lot of these unconventional superheroes and villains is that a lot of the times they make them plus sized women, because like, the one we talked about earlier, Etta Candy, she's basically a plus size, a pinup girl. She started out as that way, and she's unapologetic about it. Like, that's the best part about that character. Like, she was just like, yeah, I'm big, so what? And it's awesome. And Miranda Waller, same thing. She's like, so what? I'll still kick your hiney. Let's do this. And it's great.
So there is a trope of making villains fat, and it is frustrating because, you've got Miranda Waller. We know she's bad because she's fat. Meanwhile, like, the whole point is she's supposed to be a compromised person. She's supposed to be on the hero's side, but she does things in questionable ways. You've got Black Mariah from the comics, or just Mariah Stokes from the TV show, who in the TV show is not fat. But in the comics, well, first off, she was such a stereotype. It was painful.
Very painful.
But she was also amazing. And in the TV show, she is absolutely amazing. And I do not mind that she was not fat, simply because I am in love with Alfre Woodard. So, I mean, that woman is amazing. And she brought so much to the...
If you haven't seen the mid-range part of season one...
I didn't want it. Yes, that's all you have to say is I didn't want it. Yes. She is amazing. And she deserved an Oscar for that. Not an Oscar. I guess they get Emmys. An Emmy for that. But also, Kingpin is always portrayed as large. Even the principal from the Matilda books was a large woman. Ursula is large. Represent. Ursula t-shirt.
And it's funny, right? Like, also with that trope, they also like kind of sexualize them in a way, or make them have some sort of like sexual quirk. Like prime example, right? Like, Black Mariah was very sexual, but also she had a history of sexual assault. And then Ursula is very bountiful up top.
Well, know what it is? It's they portray the fact that they dare to have desire, and that's the deviant part. It's like, just because if they're fat, they're also sexual, and oh my God, that's awful. We can't have that. Like, and that's all supposed to be signs that they're a villain. But it's very frustrating to me, because you don't need to take that shortcut. But I will say, don't you take those fat characters from us. I do not want to see Ursula thin ever. I don't care if you get Alfre Woodard to play her. It's not going to work, because it's Ursula. So when we do our live action Little Mermaid movie, because they're going to do it, because they're doing every other freaking Disney movie in live action, I do not want to see a thin Ursula, which I heard that Once Upon a Time did, and I am not watching because I am very upset.
We don't talk about Once Upon a Time in this house because someone here liked that show at first.
I did too.
And then was betrayed.
Yeah, I just stopped watching.
I was betrayed.
Like, it wasn't even that. I just stopped watching. I don't have time.
It went on too much. They finished a story. Like, they should have kind of, they really should have just stopped when everybody woke up.
Yeah.
Now, I will say this. I do have a little faith in that Aladdin live action. A little faith. Not a lot. Not a lot. But
that's just because Will Smith's in it.
Unpopular opinion. I'm not looking forward to Will Smith as Genie.
It's not actually because Will Smith's in it. I do think that it gives the movie credit because he's in it. But because they actually got brown people.
Is it because Jafar's hot?
That is actually a problem for me.
Really?
You know who should have played Jafar?
Let me guess.
And he plays everything. Old boy who played Gandhi. And he was
Ben Kingsley?
He's Indian. He is Indian.
No, he's not.
Yes, he is.
I don't think he's
really half Indian. He's half Indian.
I'm looking it up.
He is? Real talk. I looked it up too because I thought he was white. I thought he was super white. And he is half Indian.
Oh, well, if you say so.
But... He says a lot of things, though.
Krishna Pandit Banjani. He was born in English, but with a name like Krishna Pandit Banjani, and I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it. Okay.
No, and the reason why I say that is because I've always, because the fact that Jafar is super hot and young in this, I'm like, no, I've always thought Jafar was an evil, creepy old man.
I am fine with Jafar being hot. I didn't find out that he was hot until I watched Sophia's video and everybody's going crazy about Jafar being hot. I am fine with that. Although I will say I would have loved to have seen them decide to gender swap Jafar. I know it wouldn't actually work in like time period, whatever, but it would be kind of fun. Could you imagine a super sexy femme fatale Jafar?
Or bump that. Make Aladdin a woman.
That's fine for me, too. Okay, that's a lot more interesting.
I mean, I'll take that. Like, you know, it's funny. We talk about gender swapping, and a lot of people had problems with when they gender swap characters.
Like Starbuck or Dizzy.
Yeah, and I'm like, guys, it's fine.
Yeah.
Like, it's absolutely fine, especially if you gender swap and you get an actress who's better than the male counterpart they could have gotten.
Mm-hmm. And as much as I am for gender swapping, it's not just the fact that it's gender swapping that bothers people. It's the fact that, let's go back to the whole Aladdin part. If Aladdin was a woman and the woman is pursuing the man, that's not something that you see very often at all.
Although I would love to see more of it.
I know, right?
That's because it shrivels all the internet nerds, neckbeards, testicles, and they get all upset. Because they're like, oh my God, a woman can speak for herself? My God.
Well, it's one of those things. It's like, oh no, I don't want a woman that's too forceful. But why don't any women like me? Because you're not making a move, and you don't want a woman that makes a move.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, incels, you suck.
So back to unconventional heroes. So
spoiler alert, I could go on a rant for a long time about this. But I also want to point out...
Sorry, is that a spoiler alert for a future podcast?
Oh, man.
Because he's going to rant.
I thought about it.
We will do it. We will do it, buddy.
Because I got into a black hole looking at their beliefs. Oh, boy.
It's scary. Yeah. It's scary. So, like we said, you know, sometimes I feel it's very lazy to make fat characters the villain because... you know, that's what we're supposed to know. I mean, there's that great J.K. Rowling quote about how, why is it that society wants us to believe that fat is the worst thing that we could be? Fat is somehow worse than, you know, being mean and unfair and racism and bigotry. And yet, Miss Rowling, you depend on it. The Dursleys, you know, you've got Father Dursley and Dudley Dursley, and you're constantly talking about how they're piggies. And the only reason why your beloved Hagrid is allowed to be big is because he's part giant. And Slughorn is meant to be seen as unscrupulous and doing questionable things because he's fat. Crabbing, yeah, the I don't know which one's the fat one. Crab.
It was like an inverse of Laurel and Hardy. Like.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so really. JK, it's very nice to say those things, but when you started writing, you used the trope.
So
it is a trope, but bigger people are also seen as intimidating, so you think the worst of them in the first place.
But yet, you know,
Jason pulls that excuse all the time, saying he's a big black man that's scary.
that. They do. People, if they get to know me, they'd realize I'm like a pussycat. It's fun.
You are a teddy bear. You are 100% teddy bear. You're not going to do nothing.
Exactly. Now, so it's funny, right? Like, this is such an inverse to what it used to be, right? Because back, you know, in Victorian era and stuff like that, like, royalty was considered to be big people. Like, you were supposed to be.
Yeah, like in the medieval times and all of that, it was, if you were heavy, it was because you had wealth and opulence.
Yeah, and people considered you also like, people considered, you know, large men to be virile, mm-hmm. and you know, again, like I said, opulent, because that was a sign that you could take care of yourself. And now the entire inverse of that is where people think just because you're big or just because you're not the societally acceptable size that you're unhealthy and that you treat yourself badly or you don't exercise or whatever.
And that's not true at all. No, not at all. The only thing you can tell about a fat person by looking at them is that they're fat. And I say that as a fat person, by the way, if you're not watching the video. This all comes down to class. Back in the medieval times and earlier, it was because only the wealthy could afford to be fat. Everybody else was starving. Mm-hmm. Even though I'm sure we know that there were fat peasants still. And then as things progressed in this day and era, the ideal is to be like the tiniest you can be. And you have to go to the gym and you have to this and you have to have a trainer and blah, blah, blah. And all of these things cost money. And it's about, I look good. I have the ideal beauty because I have these things that cost money. You know, back in the day, having a tan meant you worked outside. And so it was all about being pale. And now it's about, oh, I need to have a tan because then it looks like I've been on vacation. And it all comes down to class. Can you afford to go on vacation? Can you afford a trainer? Can you afford to having your meals prepared for you or any other nonsense, whatever they think you have to do? So yeah, it's this implicit bias that affects us. And like Jen said, I mean, people feel intimidated when somebody is larger, just in the same way that people will, automatically respect things that look expensive.
You know, and I'm glad you brought up the whole plus size factor, because there is a show, and I'm pretty sure I know this is going to be very near and dear to your heart, Nettie, that shows plus size and large figured female characters being super and awesome and amazing without cutting corners or making them whatever. And that's the new She-Ra. Like, those characters are, yes, they are like Shidora. She-Ra's like still like tiny, but there are characters in that show that are not the stereotypical, like, they're not Sailor Moon magical girls. You know, I love Sailor Moon. I do, but
they
not.
Are magical girls.
Yeah.
They are definitive magical girls.
Yeah, they are magical girls. But they are not that Barbie-esque. Like, you know, one of the reasons why a lot of people have problems with Sailor Moon is that the fact they're all super tall, super long legs, short skirts, and none of them have any weight on them. Like, they haven't eaten in years.
Except for Usagi, because all she does is eat. That.
But she doesn't gain any weight. So
right. Because she's magic.
You know, but... But with She-Ra, you don't have that, because there's actual characters who actually have size to them. And another show I think that does this really well is Steven Universe. Because spoiler alert,
Steven Universe,
he's a magical boy and he's a little chunkster, and it's great.
That is a show that I would say has actual plus size, whereas She-Ra is more curvy and slightly unconventional shapes. But I wouldn't really go into saying anyone on there is fat.
Well, yes, I wouldn't call them fat, but I would definitely say that they are not your stereotypical size.
That being
character.
Said, I'm totally going to do a Glimmer cosplay. Yeah. I'm not tall enough for Scorpia, although Princess Scorpia is awesome. but if I did a Scorpia, I'd need somebody to be Catra, because that's the whole point, right?
Shipping all around, all the shipping, everything is shipped.
It's friendship shipping too, but yes. But yeah, like I would be more than happy to take those tropes and throw them in a dumpster. But as we said, Miranda Waller is an amazing character, and she is scary and not a hero but a villain. Mariah Stokes is pretty awesome. And again, let's move past the initial use of the character. It's so bad. It might as well be the Welfare Queen from Glow. I mean, that's how bad it is. If you haven't read the comics, it's bad. It's real bad. But these are some amazing characters. And there is something to be said, I think, for these questionably gray characters. You know, the only way that Harley Quinn gets to be a hero is because Miranda Waller is forcing her.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's funny, right?
And that because actually starts her as a hero, because later she ends up doing hero stuff on her own.
Yeah. I mean, in the Injustice comics, which are super huge and actually really, really good because of her becoming an actual hero in those comics and working with Batman and going against Superman's forces, she has a fantastic relationship with Black Canary. And if you have not read some of the scenes and dialogue between them online, please go look it up. There's a scene where Black Canary's in the hospital and Harley Quinn talks about when she was pregnant. It is one of the best things I've ever read in a comic. And I love Why the Last Man.
Even better is earlier when they're in the middle of a fight and she finds out that she's pregnant and she's like, well, I can't beat up on you now. She's like, I know what that was like. And then she talks about being pregnant. And yeah. And then they team up after this. They form a bond.
Injustice is one of the best characterizations of Harley Quinn ever put to ink. Like, it is superb. And that's an unconventional hero, because spoilers, she was created for a cartoon. She was not initially made for comics. She was a cartoon character. Like, they literally gave the Joker a sidekick. And now I would wager to say that she's more popular than the Joker himself, because for multitudes of reasons. One, because she's become a far more powerful and strong character. And also, the Joker has fallen away. Without good representation of the Joker, which he hasn't had. Like, yeah, we got Heath Ledger, we got Mark Hamill, but for the most part, that's it, right? Harley Quinn, because of her meager beginnings, has now developed into something exceptional. And they've done, and because, and I wanted to talk about this when we talked about Miranda Waller and Black Mariah, is that because they use these characters that they're like, oh, this is a black big girl, she's got to be a villain. They also take the liberty of giving them those storylines and those unconventional arcs that they wouldn't give to a mainline character, because they're worried about ruining that mainline character's reputation. They'll give those more compelling, more original concepts to the characters that they're like, well, this is a villain, we can just throw it away, or this is the fat black girl, we don't have to worry about that, or we made Harley Quinn up for this cartoon character show, you know, spot, so we can do whatever we want with her, no one will care. And then they find out the hard way that what they've now done is made something far more compelling, far more interesting, and far more real than what they were doing. Because yes, you do have people in this world who come out to be the tall, blonde, blue-eyed, square-jawed hero, but actually most people come out to be the, I'm actually rather kind of short, I got a few extra pounds, I got brown eyes, black hair, brunette, or whatever, and I just kind of look like everybody else because we're human.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they want to think they can stand out and do things differently, when in reality, the fact that most people are just normal makes this more compelling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
by the way, this is reminding me of, props to Jessica Jones for making the Wizard the way that they portrayed him in the show.
Is that season two?
Yeah. Little short, flat, fat nerd. Love the Wizard. He's so cute. I love him. I want to protect, but I can't.
You know, it's funny, right? Like, also, one of the things about unconventional heroes is that usually unconventional heroes have unconventional relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at Luke Cage and Jessica Jones at this, because they are an interracial couple. And when they became an interracial couple, that was not a thing that happened. Like, you didn't have a black and white couple in a comic like that. And not only was it beyond sex, it was an actual relationship. They had a child together. They superheroed together and everything. And they had real problems. Mm-hmm. One of the problems they had was the fact that Jessica Jones was like, yo, we have a kid now. We can't go fighting bad guys. Like, this is super dangerous to our child, because we don't even know if our child's going to have superpowers. Like, we don't know what's going to happen with this whole thing. Because usually, like, in the conventional comics, like with Spider-Man and so forth, you know that nothing's going to happen.
2006 is when they got together.
Yeah, and before
that. Is that still very late? I guess, yeah, in comics. It's, I don't know.
Yeah.
Is it?
You got to think, right? Because, like, some of the big comic book couples were, like, were the requited love between Logan, a.k.a. Wolverine, and Jean. You also had, like, couples at the time. You had Storm and Black Panther. But no one knew about them because Black Panther's B-list and Storm was kind of the, like, active sidekick of the X-Men. Like, no one
I hate the idea that Storm could be a sidekick because she should have her own comic. She's amazing.
She, like, don't get me wrong, like, they had her own comic, but no one cared. It's like Iron Man, right? Like, no one gave a crap about Iron Man until Robert Downey Jr. realized that he was a great actor and could look super sexy with a well-trimmed goatee. And, you know, like, with the inception of, like, Jessica Jones and those ground-level superheroes, they became unconventional characters, especially for Luke Cage, because Luke Cage is a big, strong, black dude. And he goes toe-to-toe with the not-so-big, doesn't-look-very-strong, white dudes. And a lot of the times, he wins. And I can't... If the internet existed when Luke Cage was incepted, I can only imagine the things the neckbeards would say.
He can't defeat so-and-so because so-and-so's got and I wrote a nat 20 and they storm off somewhere.
Like, the things that we're thinking of as unconventional actually are far more realistic and far more grounded than what they have made into the socially acceptable hero. I mean,
by the way, Storm did have an interracial relationship with Forge.
Poor Forge.
Nobody remembers Forge.
I was going to say, who's Forge?
To be fair and honest, Wolverine has had two best friends in the X-Men. Mm-hmm. Forge and Morph were two of his best friends. And
what
the
about Kurt?
And,
come on.
They killed Morph, okay?
Yes, they killed Morph, but, like, he's still best friends with Kurt.
Yeah, he is, but they killed Morph because he was that he fell into the hole.
Oh, like, he was totally fridge, you know, and that's the thing. You don't want to be too close to Wolverine because you're going to die.
Fridge. And then, of course, with Forge, like, there was the whole traveling. There's a lot that happened with Forge. But, you know, like, and also the reason why I don't count this, the whole Storm and Forge thing, is because no one cared about Storm.
Because, like, if I had to make you think of a relationship that Storm had, a romantic relationship, what's the one you're going to think of?
It's either going to be Storm and Black Panther or Storm and Wolverine for that short period of time.
Oh,
wait, Storm and Wolverine relationship?
It was a really short one. Because there was also, by the way, can we talk about the fact that they gave Storm a wonderful character reboot, character design later, where she had the mohawk and the outfit. And it was the best iteration of Storm. Like, she
Mohawk
awesome.
Storm is 100% the best Storm ever. It is her final form. I will say that my little geek heart of hearts, and I know the character is straight, but in my heart of hearts, I always wanted her to be bi.
You know what? I don't understand why not. But then again, I still feel like now that Black Panther's had a resurgence, and we also got a version of Storm that we like from Age of Apocalypse, because that's that Mohawk Storm, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Or the movie version of the Mohawk Storm. That we might get to see that on screen.
Maybe. Well, I just don't want it to be Halle Berry. I'm sorry, Haley. I love you. You're a great actress, but you can't pull off comic book characters.
What's really sad is I was listening to a podcast and they were going through, like, well, when was the last time Halle Berry made a good movie? And they started going back through it. And I think the last one was Monster Ball. And I have problems with that movie.
Wasn't she in one of the Bond movies?
No one cares. That's not a good
No one cares.
No, that's not a good
movie. I don't care because she has still put more good out there in film than most people will ever do in a lifetime.
Oh, absolutely.
So if she wants to skate, if she wants to just do movies that don't emotionally drain her, I have no problems. I just don't want her to play any more of my comic book characters.
And, you know, I will give, now, to be fair, they didn't give Storm much to do in those movies either.
No, it's poor writing. Okay. But
so we didn't We didn't get to see Halle Berry actually try to be Storm. Like, she just kind of stood around. Again, she was relegated to the sidekick of those movies. Like,
awful. So, Jen, do you have an unconventional hero you want to talk about?
So, and she's probably not considered, like, an actual hero, but Edna Mode is one of my favorite characters that is behind the scene that technically comes along to save the day. I mean, she had...
That sounds... What is that from? That sounds so
That's from The Incredibles. Okay. No kips.
She raises that baby, by the way.
She totally does.
She totally raises that baby.
She totally does.
That Edna Mode is amazing.
Right. Super smart.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very confident. You know, keeps everybody going smooth. And yes, that's not... She's not considered a superhero, but at the same time, without her... Superheroes aren't really getting anything done.
Well, yeah. It's when you talk about her, right? Mm-hmm. She falls into that space of giving you that wisdom that you need to be a better superhero from the
support.
Yeah, from the standpoint, she literally sizes you up, realizes she's the Duke Kegley of the Incredibles franchise.
Yes, yes
yeah.
She is. She is more than just a Q. You know, she is a Q. She is an Alfred. She is a Duke Kegley. She is. Everything rolled into one. She is a mentor. She is the Uncle Ben. You put them all in and you've got Edna Mode. And she is, you know, a ringing endorsement of women in STEM because her superpower is she's an engineer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the best part is, like, the first Incredibles movie doesn't happen if she doesn't make the new suit.
Exactly.
For Mr. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't happen. And spoilers, if you haven't seen Incredibles 2 yet.
Who hasn't?
I only just saw it this year, by the way.
But if she does not help Mr. Incredible deal with the baby, like,
oh yeah.
The movies they lose because she helps him learn how to deal with his own child, and she also helps raise it up. By the way, the scene where the child is walking behind her pretending to smoke is so annoying.
There's a whole bunch of stuff from that movie that I absolutely love. I also love that she is a person who is childless by choice, and she's like, oh, kids. And then she's like, no, I like this baby. I keep this baby.
She did super good with that kid. Super good.
I keep this baby. This one I like.
And I also love the fact that they show how they also, by the way, one of the reasons why that movie is so good, and I'm fine waiting 14 years to get that sequel, is that they show how Mr. Incredible, in all his strength, all his prowess, is suffering at trying to raise these kids. And they show her handling this spastic, unpredictable child with ease.
Mm-hmm. Because it's like, by choice, you know? Like, she could master anything, but she chooses not to master this.
Absolutely. Yeah. And shows that he's making this thing into much bigger of making a mountain out of a molehill. Like, all he really has to do is just be there for them when they need them, when they need him. Like, let them grow up on their own. Like,
well, and he's honestly, he's doing a classic mistake that parents try to do is they try to fix issues for their kids. You can't live your kid's life. So he tries to fix the whole relationship thing that Invisible Girl is having with the boy she likes. And he tries to fix it. And you can't fix it. You have to let them live their life and make their own mistakes.
You can advise them, but they still have to make those choices on themselves.
And most importantly, your job is to be there when their heart's broken. And if they're surly to you, that's part of it.
Yeah. And also, if your child has multiple superpowers and has an awesome fight with a raccoon that is amazing, you just got to deal with that, dude. Because, like, you and your wife has elastic powers and you're basically Superman. Like, it's going to happen.
They're going to have a fight with a raccoon?
By the way, can we just say that raccoon probably had superpowers? Because how in the world did he survive fighting that job?
He descended from Scritch.
Yes,
from Ice Age.
That's very true.
He evolved from a Scritch.
That's very true.
But I think that Edna Mode is a fantastic example. And I think that one of the things that I like about all of these characters is none of them rely on someone else to rescue them.
Mm-hmm.
Even the villains, they don't rely on someone else to rescue them. They are self-sufficient. They don't need somebody to crack through their hard exterior. Everything mm-hmm. is self-driven, and this is why I like them.
Dude, I would love it when we get to a place where we can have basically the Bond villain trope for women. Like, where they're like, well, actually, you all thought you had me, but really I've got a secret tunnel hidden in this wall that's going to rocket me into space, and I've escaped you, Bond. Goodbye. Hit a button, fly away. Like,
I feel like somebody's going to write in and say that Diana Rigg already played her somewhere.
You know, because you have that. Like, in normal comics and normal movies and stuff, the male villain, like, especially in Bond movies, right? Like, they always have a secret escape route or whatever. And the victims or the ones caught by Bond are usually the ones he has sex with. There's problems with James Bond, folks. Problems. Lots and lots. Still want to see Idris Elba as James Bond, but there are problems with James Bond. But you don't also, but when are we going to get a mastermind woman villain? Like, when are we going to get one of those? Like, when are we going to get like an actual James Bond villain, but a woman? Like, I'm waiting for the moment where James Bond tries to bed a woman, but actually she is the super villain. She's like, no, Mr. Bond, you're not going to bed me. I'm going to expect you to die.
James Bond is stuck in
the frittata
60s.
Yeah, yeah, basically. So,
well, consider the source.
In my opinion, it's going to die off pretty soon because it won't modernize things like having a female villain or
Black James Bond.
Well, maybe Kingsman can fix this. Because if Bond's not going to do it, the Kingsman can.
So okay. So I'm glad. Oh, thank you for bringing up Kingsman. Because spoiler alert, you're probably going to have to bleep this out. But I
guess censorship is good.
Cast.
Wait, what?
So, if you have spoiler alert for Kingsman, the first movie, the princess.
Oh, that is all BS. Let's just say she offers him a sexual favor.
She does, and I give this movie credit. Like, I feel like they do definitely objectify her in this movie, but I think they do it for a reason. But I also like the fact that it's her. I love the fact that it's her that makes the advance. It's her that makes the deal, because you don't get that in movies a lot. You don't get women being okay with sex at all in movies. Like, anytime they're okay with sex, they're a prostitute or they're some sort of like drug addict or some sort of dark past where they were sexually assaulted by men or whatever.
Oh yeah. Cause they're only badass because they were raped. Yeah. I hate that trope.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, but for her, she's like, you think you're going to save this place? That's fine. If you save it, I'll do this. And he's like, all right. By the way, the fact that the Kingsmen do that.
I have one better, by the way.
The walking set.
I have one better. She didn't mean to receive.
That's would be
possible.
And he was just as excited.
By the way, that would be fantastic. Also, you see that in Deadpool 1, by the way.
Yes, you do. And that's why I bring it up. Because as Faye said in our chat, Deadpool's an unconventional hero. And he swears a lot.
See, Jen? No. Okay. So insight into the behind the scenes of Talk Nerdy to Me, right? Jen asked, she's like, well, Deadpool would count as an unconventional hero, right? And I was like, I don't think so, because he's still a white guy.
Yeah, that was all he said.
We were having this very discussion about Deadpool, because she's like, he would be an unconventional hero, right? I was like, no, he's a white guy.
Well, I said by actions as well. And okay, so comic book Deadpool, not movie, because they really didn't go far enough. Comic book Deadpool is supposed to be so disfigured that everyone is grossed out by looking at him. Movie Deadpool is not even close.
He's Ryan Reynolds, and we know he's gorgeous.
But not even that. Like, nothing's oozing. Yeah, that's the whole thing. Like, I always thought Deadpool was oozing.
He's a CW character.
He's a CW character. I mean, it's like, oh no, I've been so disfigured. I look like the Phantom of the Opera. You know, it's just a bit of latex.
Oh no, I look like Ryan Reynolds before makeup in the morning.
Okay. Yeah, woke up like this.
I woke up like this. What do I do? I don't know, be sexy, I guess.
I And like, honestly, if that was his face, like, it could be fixed. It could be like, there's so many other things. It's really frustrating because there are people out there who have scars that are more intense. And then they go and they watch this movie and it's, oh, it's so horrible. I'm going to have Jason Lee just go on a litany of things that I think your face looks like, which is just mean. Personally, I like the fact that the character has this disfigurement, that the character has this problem, that he has to cover his face because it's gooing and it's gushing and it's just, he's constantly dealing with this radiation burn that should be killing him, but his regenerative powers are so strong that he's fighting it off.
You know, it's funny, right? Because a lot of people forget that there was a character like that before Deadpool.
Deadshot?
His name is Spawn.
Oh, yeah. Well, Spawn is a little different.
Spawn's a little different. Yeah. He's not healing factor. He's just a dead guy who's been completely disfigured and he loses his life because of whatever. He's a black guy who is super totally disfigured and tries to gain his life back, but he can't because his wife doesn't recognize him because he's super disfigured. And they kind of turn that on its head with Deadpool. But I definitely think Spawn is an unconventional hero.
So, by the way, Deadpool came out a year before Spawn.
Really?
Yep. He is in the New Mutants, 1991, and Spawn was in 1992.
Darn it, McFarlane. What's wrong with you?
It's actually more than a year.
Come out a year earlier, McFarlane. God. But the point still remains that Spawn is an unconventional hero, and because, one, he's black, two, he had the whole, you know, I'm the whole disfigured thing and all. Matter of fact, he's like probably, he's probably the most prolific anti-hero before, like black anti-hero character, like other than like Batman, right? Like, because Batman's the biggest anti-hero, right? Like, that's the biggest one.
Well, Batman's an anti-hero, but I think that Spawn is a bigger, I think that Deadpool is more of a reluctant, he's an anti-hero, but he's a reluctant hero as well.
Can we call Deadpool the troll hero? I feel that's more suitable.
Well, he's a troll everything. So, I mean, you know, that's a given.
By the way, to be fair and honest, Ryan Reynolds, perfect cast.
Ryan Reynolds is perfect. When I first heard that he was cast as Wade Wells, I was so excited. And then I saw that train wreck of a movie. And even if you see him in interviews, he says, that's not the one. He just said yes because it was Deadpool. And then if you see interviews, he said yes to Green Lantern without looking at the script because, of course, I want to be Green Lantern.
Best post credits.
Yes.
Best post credits.
It's even better when you're in Canada and you're in a movie theater in Canada and he says, "You're welcome, Canada." And we all cheer.
Oh, man, Green Lantern, you hit the big time, kid.
So Shane brings up that the Spawn movie was a rubbish film. I will say that the HBO animated was a million times better because same time HBO came out with an animated movie and then the theaters had the live action movie. The animated movie was so much better.
And you can actually get the animated Spawn on HBO Go or HBO Now, whatever you got right now.
Yeah.
I would also like to say, to save him some rep, Michael Jai White, who played Spawn in that live action movie, has done a lot of good movies.
Michael Jai White?
Yes, it was. Wow. That's one of his biggest roles starting out. Michael Jai White also was one of the gangsters in Dark Knight, but also he did a little known movie called Blood and Bone.
Mm-hmm.
Blood and Bone is where he's a martial artist seeking revenge and all this other stuff for a friend of his who was killed in prison by Kimbo Slice, by the way.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, I know, right? And he stars alongside Dante Bosco, who I actually interviewed on Talk Nerdy to Me, who played Zuko from Avatar and Korra the Last Airbender, Korra and stuff like that. But it's actually really good. And the thing is, Michael Jai White is an actual martial artist. So he does his own fights and choreography and all that good stuff. So it's not just some BS like look at me do this slow-mo punch because I don't want to hurt the stunt guy. Like, he's actually doing the stuff, and it's good. It's like watching a Wesley Snipes movie, right? Because Wesley Snipes is an actual martial artist, and he also sells some action when he does it. So mm-hmm. It's really good, and Michael Jai White has done some good stuff, but that Spawn movie is not good. To be fair, John Leguizamo, pretty great in that movie.
And he's in both of them. He's in the live action and the animated.
Because John Leguizamo's pretty darn great. And he calls his son Honey, and it's amazing.
And the actor that plays Spawn in the animated, Keith David, is an amazing actor, and his voice is perfect, but it's also Dr. Facilier.
Can we also say that if Keith David snuck up behind you and spoke to you, you would cry?
Oh, I would. Things would happen.
There'd be a lot of contradictory reactions.
So I do want to bring up, and this I think I'm stealing from Jason, because Jason told me how important this character is to him. Miles Morales.
Oh, gosh.
Jason, why don't you tell us how important it was for you to see Miles Morales?
So I had. It's not very often that I have an experience at a movie theater. But seeing Into the Spider-Verse and seeing Miles Morales put onto the silver screen and done so well made me realize how much my childhood was lacking. Because, yes, Black Panther existed. Yes, Storm existed. Yes, Luke Cage existed. But these were B and C tier heroes. You didn't see them in comic shops unless you asked for them specifically.
And they were, the whole point of them is that they were black. They weren't heroes who were black. They were black heroes.
Yeah. And the fact that they take Miles Morales and they not only, they get rid of the whole with great power comes great responsibility moral, and they actually make the moral of the movie that anyone can be behind the mask of Spider-Man, to include a biracial black and Hispanic kid from New York who gets sent to a private school because his father and mother want the best for him, and he doesn't want that. Like, one of the understated things about Morales in that movie is the fact that he doesn't want to go to the private school. He thinks he's fine.
Careful, I haven't seen it yet.
This isn't a spoiler. This is just, you see the scene in the trailer where his dad's like, say I love you. And he's like, Dad, say I love you. By the way, the most realistic idea of a parent ever. Because parents embarrass you guys, okay? They love it and they get off on it. It's a thing.
That's very true.
But Miles Morales being done so well, and the fact of the matter is nothing about his color is accentuated. Like, being biracial is not what makes him Miles, right? Like, what makes him Miles is the fact that he's smart, he's capable, but he's also new at this whole thing. And in the movie, there's a great scene where he's actually in his house getting ready for school. He talks to his dad in English, immediately listens to his mother in Spanish, answers her, and keeps going. They don't subtitle it. They don't do anything to it. It's just a part of his regular life.
Which is so true for so many kids, you know, especially if you grew up in a multicultural family or a multilingual family. And also, even if you're just you're going to English school and your parents speak another language at home, you have to learn to code switch. And that is modern day.
Yeah. And it's so great. And like the experience I had was watching this. I'm like, where was this when I was growing up? Like, mm-hmm. where was my Miles Morales? And I was sitting there thinking about it, and I'm looking through all the superheroes and characters that I know, and he wasn't there. Like, he just wasn't. Like, I had to like Superman or Batman or Spider-Man, as he was known as Peter Parker.
You had to wait till 2011 for him to show up. That's what, yeah.
Yeah. Like, and I, by the way, I was born in 1985. So that's a long time to wait for a superhero that looks like me.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I'm not biracial, but to see a brown superhero up front, by the way, like, if it wasn't for Black Panther, I don't think Into the Spider-Verse would exist, right? Because we had had two superhero, well, we had one definite superhero movie and another superhero-esque movie, quote-unquote, starring a Shaquille O'Neal. We had Kazam.
Oh,
and,
gosh, that doesn't count. And, let's not forget about Blade.
Shazam
is the one where he plays a genie. It's real bad. it's
Kazam's
real.
Kazam's the new one that came out.
Kazam is the new one. Yeah, yeah. Okay. That's the one with Billy Batson.
No, that's Shazam.
Shazam, not Kazam. Sorry. It's a little hard. They're basically, one has an S, one that doesn't.
That's okay, because originally Shazam's Captain Marvel, so it's all good.
Yeah, it's
which is not that Captain Marvel. Yeah, yeah.
There's a whole confusion along with that character. And by the way, I feel like that's Marvel thumbing its nose at DC consistently with Captain Marvel. But anyway,
so that the people don't get really upset. Captain Marvel was his own comic book character in a response to Superman put out by a separate comic book company that was then later absorbed by DC with the name Captain Marvel.
But they didn't
Marvel Comics.
The DC didn't keep the rights to Captain Marvel. So when Marvel
Comics came out, one of the first things they did was make a Captain Marvel, and there was a whole lawsuit and then an agreement and blah, 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 and they switched to Shazam. A lot of people are not happy about it, and they really think that Shazam should still have the Captain Marvel name, but whatever.
And a lot of, yeah.
I'm not saying yay or nay. I'm just saying there is a history there, and it's not what many people think. It was not DC making a Captain Marvel in response to Marvel. It was Captain Marvel came before Marvel Comics.
Yeah. It was DC taking a character they saw that was popular and buying the company for that character.
Yeah.
And then Marvel stole that character because Marvel did a whole lot of that.
But they didn't steal the character. They just stole the character name.
Yeah, they jumped on the rights.
Yeah,
they jumped on the
because Marvel was completely different. That wasn't magic. And it was alien technology.
Yeah. And by the way, all you neckbeards out there who still think it should be Shazam should still be Captain Marvel, we don't need another square-jawed white guy. We've got an awesome female
teacher. Okay. I'm going to say I understand people griping about it. I like it for the humor. But by the way, I think it's also really funny that you call everybody neckbeards. What's on your neck right now? Oh, that's right. That's a beard. But I like Shazam because Shazam, and we're going to bring up Shazam. Shazam is an unconventional hero. Why? Because he's 15 years old. And when he turns into his superhero form, he's an adult. He is an adult. But he's still a kid inside. They don't do that nonsense comic book thing, which, by the way, I'm looking at you.
Censorship is good.
We're going to make a born sexy male character, all right? And suddenly we have to treat him like he's an adult, even though he was born yesterday.
Oh my God.
I hate that
term. Oh, my God. I can give Nutty a spoiler warning.
Oh, no. I have to cut that out. All right. Dang it. Dang it. All right. I'll cut it out. Oh, I'm terrible. Yes. I hate it. I hate the trope. If you've got a kid that transforms, their brain and who they are and their rights and consent are still a child.
You know, and I will, and if you have not read Shazam, there is a wonderful comic that features Superman in Shazam. And in the comic, something happens. And because Shazam is a child in an adult Superman body, that's basically what he's in.
Mm-hmm.
Wrecks a police station. Like, he wrecks a bunch of police, goes after the person that caused the situation. He is then stopped by Superman, and Superman goes, "Dude, you're a hero. You can't do that. What is wrong with you?" And he's like, that was this person. And he's like, "What are you talking about?" And that's when he reveals that he is actually just a child.
Mm-hmm.
And Superman has one of the best reactions I've ever seen in a Superman comic. All he says to him is, "Who did this to you?"
Yeah.
And he goes and finds the person who gave Shazam these powers. And he's like, "What in the world is wrong with you? That is the child. He is supposed to be having child problems. He's supposed to be doing child things, not fighting men problems. Like, doing the thing that we..."
Robin.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so good. It's so freaking good. And the scene later on where Superman meets Billy Batson as a child and introduces himself. He's like, "Yo, you know, you met me before. And he tells his, you know, identity to Billy Batson. It's one of the most tender, sweet moments I've seen in a Superman comic or slash Shazam comic ever. And it's really, really good. And again, Superman is not good because he's super powered, bulletproof, can fly, and square jawed, and is super handsome, blah, blah, blah. He's good when you give Superman the most realistic problems ever. If you've not read All-Star Superman, read it. It's a story about Superman getting space cancer.
All right.
I know that sounds ridiculous and super
no,
dumb.
No, it's Superman, so it makes sense. No, really, but, it does. He's not going to get human Earth cancer.
Exactly. But the way they have him address it and the way they have Superman go through these problems, amazing. Same thing with Red Son of Krypton, because it changes his origin. It changes if he doesn't land in Smallville, Kansas, to a kind and moral family. What happens if he lands in communist Russia?
Yeah. So there's a lot of history of children in comic books being heroes. You know, you've got Dick Grayson, you've got Raven from Teen Titans, you've got Superboy, you know, Billy Batson, Kitty Pryde, you name it.
You mentioned the title of an unconventional hero. Can we talk about Robin? And the reason why I say unconventional is because there's only been one female Robin.
Oh, well, yeah, that one's kind of fun. But actually, I was kind of moving forward towards Kamala Khan.
Ah.
The latest Ms. Marvel.
I have her pulled up on my phone, by the way. Yeah.
The latest Ms. Marvel. I absolutely love it. And she came at a time when it was needed. And there are people that will sit here and say, oh, you're trying to make the United Colors of Benetton in our comic books and it's diversity for diversity's sake. What? But I will say that what I like about Kamala is she is a Muslim. She is her costume goes from a skin tight, you know, because there were Ms. Marvels before her, a skin tight, very revealing outfit to a tunic, long sleeves, long pants, very modest in line with the tenets of her faith. And she's awesome. And she's a fan. Like, she's one of these characters. She's like, oh my gosh, I'm meeting Steve Rogers. Can I have your autograph? Things like that. And she is a delight. Everything that I've read from her, I have been 100% behind. She is a positive character. She is a great role model. She is someone that young women can relate to. And it goes to show that, you know, when we say that we need representation, I'm not saying that it's, you know, this is for all the Muslim young women out there to read. No, this is for everyone to read. We need to see representation of more than just what we are. It's really great to be able to see yourself reflected in comics. For Jason, he didn't have that. He didn't have his Miles Morales. But for many young white people, we had, you know, Kitty Pryde. We had Dick Grayson. That was supposed to be our representation. We also need to see the Miles Morales. We also need to see the Kamala Khan, because our experience is not the only experience out there. And there is a world full of people, and we need to see that, especially if you're in an area that is not very diverse. Like, I grew up in a pretty diverse area, but then I have moved to less diverse areas, and sometimes it's like a little unnerving. And people in those areas, their fiction is how they learn about the world.
One of the things we researched before we did the podcast was Ms. Marvel. And because there's a storyline in the comics, Rogue, an X-Men, absorbed all of her powers.
Yep.
And that's how Rogue gained the ability to fly and do all this cool
stuff. When it was Carol Danvers, right?
Yes, when it was Carol Danvers. But then somehow Carol Danvers got her powers back.
Yeah.
It's really, really convoluted how she got her powers back. Like, Rogue went through the thing called the something Solaris, and they split her from the persona yep. of Carol Danvers, and then somehow they killed the persona of Danvers and Rogue.
Well, because Rogue had Carol Danvers inside her head. So in addition yeah. to her, because she drained her almost completely. So in addition,
Because it prolonged the fight. Like Rogue can yeah. take your powers and have them for a little bit, but if she holds on too long, she yeah. keeps you.
But she had Carol's memories. And so she was holding on to that for a really long time, and that was actually really messing with Rogue.
Yeah.
Although it did teach her morality.
Yeah, and yeah, through that she gained morality for because of Carol Danvers, because Carol Danvers' lover was in trouble on a shield carrier, and that awoken the persona of Carol Danvers inside of her, and she fought it. And then she also fought somebody, something called Space Knight, I think it was, and she absorbed his powers and memory, and then she gained morality and honor through that. And it's a lot.
But I'm actually really glad that they just went Captain Marvel Carol Danvers and that they didn't go into all the backstory.
Yeah, and I also love the fact that they took the new Mrs. Marvel and they didn't just give her a representation of the old Captain Marvel's or Miss Marvel's powers. They let her have her own powers, and then she decided to take the mantle of Mrs. Marvel. That was her choice, right? Yeah. And again, here's a little inside baseball for me. I was raised by all women. I know a lot of women, and I have a lot of conversations with women about things that women go through and have to deal with. And one of the things that I've realized that women have to go through that men do not is when it comes to protection in a sexual fashion. Men can just walk into a clinic. We can go get condoms, and that's it. End of story.
The most you're going to get is like when, you know, Kentucky Fried Chicken, when the kid goes into the pharmacy and he's all nervous about asking for condoms because it's the yeah. old guy that's known him his whole life. But yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Full stop. Whereas women have to see a doctor. They have to go through this. They have to go through that. And just by making a choice, they open themselves up to so much scrutiny. And honestly,
and sometimes it's not even for contraception, you know?
Yeah.
Just saying.
Sometimes, you know, discomfort, pain, and follow-up visits. I mean, sometimes these things that they go through, not only do they, yes, provide contraception, but also there are after effects that have to be addressed because of what they go through.
You don't say, Jason.
And it's like I've said this, I've honestly, within the last several weeks, I've had this conversation multiple times. I'm like, bruh, just get a condom. Like, dudes out there, if you like a lady, maybe you should just be like, I got condoms. Like real talk. Just try that. See what happens.
I will say, and this might, you know, some people might not want their 13-year-olds listening to this, but I don't care. If you think you're adult enough to have this kind of a relationship, you should be adult enough to be able to do it safely. And yes. if it is with somebody who happens to have need of using a condom, depending on their body parts, it is that if it's your body part, you should have it. You should not expect someone who doesn't have this body part to have it. And if a person can't provide that, they do not deserve to partake in this adult relationship.
It's just a smidge of respect. Like they,
if you went to your job and you didn't bring the materials you need for your job, you could not perform your job. So this is no different.
Absolutely. And
this is why your teacher's trying to remind you to bring a pencil to class.
And I bring this up because women throughout history, since the earliest days, have not had the ability to make a choice, whether it's about their sexuality, whether it's about their sexual preference, whether it's about the job they want.
So what you're saying is, yeah, that there's traditionally more oppression and society limits the choices.
Yes. Yes. Like the fact that they let this people. Kamala Khan make the fact that they make Kamala Khan allow her to make the choice
yeah.
of taking upon the mantle of kept Ms. Marvel and being a superhero and doing it her way.
This isn't something that was thrust on her. This wasn't something that was forced on her. Exactly. Yeah. And that's kind of important, I think.
Yeah, because again, it doesn't happen that often. Like, again, Nutty, you call me, you tell me I'm a feminist all the time, and I say I'm a pocket feminist because I just kind of whip my pocket feminism card out every once in a while. But like this, like, I'm not saying it was like a mind blown moment because I was raised by women. I've been around women my whole life. But the gravity and the weight of so much that they do is nothing. It's what men do is compared to them is nothing in retrospect. Like,
so what you're saying is that you have empathy and we're very proud of you.
Empathy? Like, I couldn't call them empathetic. I just realized that it's crap. Like, again, like,
yeah.
When I can literally pick up any comic book and find a male character that I can relate to versus
boobs and butt everywhere.
How many comics do women have to go through before they find a
burrito
female character that actually is? Yeah,
Nutty, edit that out.
It's, you know what? It's fine. It is super fine.
How many comics do women have to go before they find
anything that's not terrible representing women, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it just
let's put it this way.
It blew
my
mind.
The Silver Age, I think it was the Silver Age. If I get the ages wrong, just correct me. At one point in Wonder Woman's career, the Justice League makes her their secretary and the writers take her powers away.
Boy, how, like, we're just.
That's Wonder Woman. Like, come on. Now, Wonder Woman was written by a polyamorous bondage fetishist who based them off of the two dominant women in his life who I think may or may not have also been involved with each other. She was written as bisexual in a time that nobody even knew what that was. And so they were like, no, this is way too scary. We better make her, like, less powerful.
She's got to run away with a man. She's got to make her choices because she's pursuing a man.
Yes.
It's fine.
It's all about Steve Trevor, right? Anyway, so I do want to mention before we get out of here, because we are talking about Wonder Woman, Etta Candy, we did drop her name before. She is from the original comics. The very first time you see her is 1942 in Wonder Woman number 2. Sorry.
She's waiting for me.
In Sensation Comics number 2.
By the way, Etta Candy is winning for me. Because not only in her original form, she is a voluptuous pinup girl and is proud of it and is open about it.
And she is a fat pinup girl. She is awesome.
And then she becomes a black or a person of color. I think she's actually Hispanic. Voluptuous woman of curves and color.
Not only that, she is unapologetic. Because her powers come from eating candy at one point.
It's great.
She likes to crush men between her thighs. She is amazing.
Oh my God. She's stepping on me. It's great.
My only problem is that in the New 52, she was made thinner. And in the TV show, she was a thin woman. And thankfully, that horrible David E. Kelly Wonder Woman TV show never got off the ground. That was also supposed to be a thin woman. But when the movie came out, which, by the way, I rewatched that this week, that movie is still rewatchable. I know it hasn't been that long, but after seeing Captain Marvel, I actually think I even like Wonder Woman better than I did originally. I still think I like Captain Marvel better, but I love the Wonder Woman movie, and it was so much fun to rewatch. But watching Etta Candy in that, all I could think is she needs more scenes. And I don't know how they're going to figure it out, but I really want them to bring her back into the 1980s Wonder Woman, because Wonder Woman 2 is supposed to take place in the 80s, and figure it out, give her superpowers, get her into the 80s. I want to see her in a power suit with, like, giant shoulder pads and crazy hair. And
maybe it's because I have a thing for the pinup style, but, like, I also was, when I was researching this, they had an awesome, like, classic pinup style picture of Etta Candy where she had, like, the blonde with the curls and
the victory rolls and the red dress with the white polka dots.
I'm kind of cool with that. Like, I'm okay with that. Like, I'm just saying.
And that was
like,
drawn in 2016.
Like, for me, if you want to do that, like, I'm cool with that. Like, I'm absolutely cool with that.
Did you find that. Any of the, like, vintage Etta Candy?
Where she was, like, the tiny person and, like, bouncing all over the place. Because like, it was a scene. I don't know if she, like, got turned into a kid or whatever, but she looked like a kid stuffing candy in her mouth. And definitely reminded me of Betty from Rat Queens.
Okay, I am going to send you a picture. And this is from like the 1940s, I think. I'm going to send it to you in this little chat here, just so you can see. Those of you at home, just look up vintage or 1940s Etta Candy, how she was drawn originally, just to give you an idea. She was a redhead, but she has always been drawn. You know, like her original inception was never supposed to be tiny.
It is fantastic. Like,
yeah, she's so great.
You know, it's kind of.
I just found a cosplayer cosplaying vintage Etta Candy with the big H on her. Oh, it's amazing. I love it.
So, it's funny you bring to cosplay. I found two cosplays that I absolutely am exceptionally happy with. There was one who does the current war chief of the Horde in World of Warcraft is the undead leader, Lady Sylvanas. And I saw someone doing a cosplay of her, and it was a plus-size girl. She did a cosplay of Lady Sylvanas, and it was fantastic. Another plus-size cosplayer did Roadhog.
Roadhog is an amazing plus-size cosplay.
Oh, my God. It's wonderful.
No one who is thin should ever play Roadhog. You know, should ever cosplay as Roadhog.
Squirrel Girl.
Oh, yeah, Squirrel Girl.
Oh, my God. We didn't talk about
a fun cosplay.
I know, right? Like... And I like the best part of this. Squirrel Girl is literally the most, like, she's just not the type of superhero you would see, right? Like, I mean.
Because she's a squirrel and she's a girl?
Yeah. Like, I mean, think about it, right? I've got the power of the storm, or I've got superpowers. I can bend space energy and shoot it at people. Oh, I'm bulletproof. I'm a spider woman. And she's like, I'm a squirrel.
Okay, but she is, now we have discussed this previously, she is the most powerful superhero, or at least one of the top. She has superhuman agility, senses, and strength, a prehensile tail, which squirrels don't actually have, razor-sharp claws, retractable knuckle spikes, and the ability to communicate with squirrels, which means she can have a horde of squirrels fighting with her.
Millions.
She's pretty amazing.
Oh my God. I just had a thought.
Yes.
Pippi Longstockings.
Yeah, Pippi.
She's stronger than 10 policemen, a.k.a. she also beat the Thing in an arm wrestling competition. So I think she's way stronger than that.
But she needs Annika and Tommy to like help her do things rationally and to think about what she's doing.
Yeah, because she's the definite idea of like, oh, I can't get rid of this problem. I'm going to punch my way through it.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, I'm going to
throw people off with doubloons.
Yeah, gold doubloons. She also threw a horse, by the way. She threw a horse. Like, just poor horse. Which, I think 10, I don't think 10 policemen could pick up a horse. I'm just saying. Oh, completely forgot about the race swap of Domino from Deadpool 2.
Oh, I loved that. I thought that was fantastic. I am
and her here natural hair.
Oh, yes, more natural hair in TV and movies. Thank you.
Look, folks, I'm black. I got nappy hair. It's fine. It happens. It happens, and it's great, okay? But really? Like, you're on the table, too? Like, really? And if you notice, I look at him, and he gets down because he knows he's not supposed to be there. Like,
yeah.
But no, like, Domino, fantastic. And you know what? I'm mad about the fact that we didn't hear the neckbeards out there complaining about Domino. You know why I feel like they weren't complaining? Because she's super hot. I'm just saying. Like, she's...
I think they were out there.
Like one or two.
I heard a lot of complaints, but...
I feel like those are the ones who
I don't
like...
care. I really do not care.
The ones complaining about Domino being an attractive black woman are the same ones complaining about Bond potentially being a black attractive man named Idris Elba, who is also my internet boyfriend.
Yeah. It's, I mean... I have such little patience because you know what? It's the same people that argue against these characters. You know, the race swapping or gender swapping are the ones that are going to absolutely freak out because they're like, no, you're changing that character's culture. But then they'd have no problem if it was the reverse. And I'm sorry, most characters do not have a culture that is most white characters don't have a culture that is part of being white. There are a few examples. For instance, Matt Murdock, he needs to be Catholic. It is very important that he is Catholic.
It's a part of him. And
he is an Irish Catholic. Like that is part of who he is. And I'm not saying that you could never change something there, but you'd need to have something like, if you change that, why don't you just come up with a different character?
Yeah, because his struggle is the fact that he was a Orthodox Catholic kid.
No, not Orthodox.
But he was a Catholic kid. He was a devout Catholic who then had to realize that he had to do sinful things or things that he thought of as sinful to accomplish good things. And it was a terrible conflict within him. And it's probably one of the best part of being Daredevil.
And the only reason that I really pushed that it wasn't, you know, that, you know, no, it's not Orthodox, is that they're actually two completely different churches. and the Orthodox Church would not appreciate being lumped into the Roman Catholic Church.
Oh, no.
It's not a well actually moment. It's a, no, there's, because Orthodox tends to actually be more than just, like, it really is tied to culture, whereas just Roman Catholic could be pretty much many cultures.
Yeah.
One character I did not mention, and I know I've mentioned on the podcast before, I'm going to go with She-Hulk because She-Hulk does not have a secret identity.
She doesn't.
She's a lawyer, and she goes to court with green skin.
You know, Can we get a Daredevil Matt Murdock She-Hulk crossover? Can we get that?
They've had it in comics, but yes, I would love that.
Because she's a lawyer and he's a lawyer. I feel like they could make a great team. Like, do you really want to go against Daredevil and She-Hulk?
Yeah, not really. Well, I just don't want to go against She-Hulk. I want to be on her side. She is fantastic. She is such a fun character, but she owns it. This is who I am. And people may not like it, but it's who I am. And I'm not going to hide who I am to make other people comfortable.
You know, and, you know, for one last thing that I did not talk about, because this will be outside of the realm of comic book heroes.
Well, we talked about Pippi Longstocking, so I think you're good.
I know. More of a heroine is in the most recent film by Jordan Peele.
Oh, no.
Us. Lupita Nyong'o.
Who's a Disney princess and can do no wrong.
Is in this movie. And she is, if you haven't seen Us, there's a duality in it. So she's not only a villain, but she's also a hero. And it's marvelous. And because of Black Panther, we've gotten so much more acceptability. And I hate saying this, but because Black Panther made kajillions and jillions of dollars, they realized that it's okay to be a person of color in a movie and herald and lead that movie. And because of Us, we get her, and she's the heroine / the villain of this movie, the hero of this movie, and it's wonderful. And again, like, you don't get that type of awesome moment. Like, I feel, again, my tiny little feminist flag is waving, because I feel like as much as I had that Miles Morales moment, I feel like women are still missing that moment, period.
I think a big issue that happens is a lot of people think, like, when it comes to, are we talking about race? Are we talking about gender equality? It's not an either or. there's layers of everything, you know. Oh, well, we put a woman in this, so you should be happy. No, it's not enough. We're not happy. We want everything. We want, everybody needs something. And
women come in different versions. Sorry, they do. Some are big, some are small, some are black, some are white.
Yeah, exactly.
They're just like us dudes.
Yeah, yep. So, quick question, and this is a little bit off topic, but if we were to have a She-Hulk movie, who do you want to play her?
I know this is probably, I'm just caught up in the moment. The one who played Gamora, like, she's already green.
She's not naturally green, Zoe Saldana. She's already Gamora. I'm going to argue that because I want, she does look great in green. I want my She-Hulk to be bigger. I want my She-Hulk to have visible muscles. She was played in the 90s by Brigitte Nielsen, which is pretty good by Hollywood standards, but I want She-Hulk to look like Zap from the American Gladiators. You know, I want, like, if she could act Serena Williams to play her.
Okay, first off, if Serena Williams is in anything, I'm watching. Because if there is an opposite to my crush on Idris Elba, it's Serena Williams. only rivaled
by Lupita?
No.
Oh.
By my crush on Queen Latifah.
Oh, now I would not be opposed, even though she does not have the muscles, I would not be opposed to Queen Latifah being an older She-Hulk.
Because she is, not only is she a very, by the way, I don't know if anybody listening out there is old enough to remember the Rock and Jock basketball that MTV had back when musicians and actors played basketball against one another. But Queen Latifah was in that, and she was fantastic, okay? She can ball.
Of course she was.
She can ball, son. And please. But seriously, though, Queen Latifah physically is actually – she's actually pretty imposing because she is a larger woman, not only by
she's
stature.
Tall,
but
yeah.
She's a plus-size woman. She's got great stature. So she could give –
Dana, are you listening to us?
So she could give – a physicality to the role of Queen Latifah. And spoiler alert, if you have not seen my favorite musical, which is Chicago, she plays Big Mama in
that
movie.
She is amazing in that role. Yeah.
Great. So if you cannot give me that, you give me Queen Latifah. I'll take that.
Yeah, I think what I really want is I want somebody that is muscular. And that is something that we don't see on women. Thank you so much for joining me. I really enjoy Unconventional Heroes. And I had so many that I wanted to talk about when I was driving back from Mysticon. And then I only thought about like three when we talked about it today. So if you have some unconventional heroes that you want us to talk about, and maybe you want us to revisit this or whatever, send in some information. Go to the Facebook group. Go send us some email. Send us a voicemail. However you'd like, let us know who are your favorite unconventional heroes and why. And Jason, where can people hear you and Jen on the internet?
You can always find us at TalkNerdyToMePodcast.com. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/NerdyToMe. And of course, you can find us on Twitter at NerdyToMePodcast.
And hey, all of that is with the number 2. You have to tell them it's the number 2.
Because it's been a while since I've done that, by the way. I thought I was going to mess it up.
You didn't mess it up at all. It was beautiful. Now that you've pointed it out, you ruined the fact that you didn't mess it up.
Well, you never know. There could be new people in the audience and be like, why is he doing that? Like, why is he making it so formulaic?
Nobody's thinking that. See, again, you're ruining it. There's this thing called seamless, and you're pointing all the seams out.
Look, if you're a new person and have never listened to this podcast before,
you're like, who is this guy?
Yeah, vindicate me.
So thank you so much. You can hear all the links that you can send in feedback in the outro. Thank you for joining us. And I do want to go over, and I want to very quickly thank the Patreons. The patrons on the Patreon account, however you say that, you can You can donate to the show using Patreon, or you can donate using PayPal. You can mail me something. I don't know. It's up to you. But basically, the reason why I collect donations is to pay for server costs, to pay to keep this podcast going and to keep my bandwidth and everything else. So thank you very much. And thanks to these patrons, we now do 2 episodes a month. That's right.
Indeed.
We do 2 episodes a month. We used to do 1 episode a month, and now we do 2. And very soon, the swag schedule is going to be starting up about this time every year. The patrons are going to get their gifts. So if you are at, I think it's $10 and above, you get a t-shirt. If you are at $5 and above, you get to pick a piece of art, original piece of art that gets sent to you. And then if you are at $1 and above, you get a thank you once a month. If you are a patron, you get access to the t-shirt where you pay cost. Everybody else can buy the t-shirts with a slight markup. It ends up being $5. You are a patron though, you get it at cost. So thank you to the top big daddy, Jax. Thank you to the second big daddy, Jason. Thank you to Andy Luke. Thank you to Susanna. Thank you to Shane, our number one fan. Thank you to new patron Will. Thank you to Zach Mann. Thank you to Greg. Thank you to the Radical Geek. Thank you to Steve Pritchard. Thank you to Susan. Thank you to Lynette McFadden. Thank you to Melissa A. Bartell. Thank you to
the Bathtub Mermaid.
I saw you.
I made it just in time. Just in time.
Thank you to Harold. Thank you to Ian. Thank you, Rich the TT. Thank you, Patrick Scafito. Thank you, Ken. Thank you, Kinsey. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Justine. Thank you, everyone, for everything you have done. Oh, and thank you to our one that donates through PayPal. Thank you, Dagny. Thank you, everyone, for all of your support. We appreciate it. Always. All right. And you can listen to a cool promo about a cool podcast that you should be listening to. Oh, and patrons, if you have something to promote, your promos go first.
In the distant future, humanity entertains itself with countless hours of podcasts. But the podosphere is troubled. Corporate networks and true crime shows rule the iTunes rankings with an iron fist. The year is 2019. Our only hope, the Nostalgia Pilots.
Welcome to Nostalgia Pilots, a podcast that for 100 years has fought the evils of outer space. I'm your host, Hugh.
I'm Jared.
And I'm Jason.
And I'm Spence.
4 podcasters fight back by watching and discussing classic giant robot anime.
Hey, do we have any of those cancers left? You know, the underwater ones?
Yeah. Thanks, that's what we need in this episode is more.
Grab a couple Saturn rockets to it. It'll be...
Their first mission, Toonami mainstay mobile suit Gundam Wing.
Oh my god, you're describing the Spice Girls.
See? You get it.
Suit up at nostalgiapilots.com.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimlas.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347-NUTTY42.
Hi. I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite podcast on the Citadel.